Hi and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for this 4th of December 2022. This is your host Nigel Creasy, and this week we've got the second part of my chat with Jude Jennison, the equine leadership guru. Enjoy.
Absolutely. And then of course you've got different stakeholders who have different perspectives, who all want different things. And that often is surprising, but I don't know why it's surprising, because of course they have different things. Yeah. You know, the sales director is always going to want something different from the ops director because they're incented in different ways. And therefore their requirements are always going to be different. And actually that's a positive thing, because what that does is it creates a more well-rounded and more holistic view.
Yeah.
So I think this is where as project managers and as leaders, we need to be able to develop those skills of uncertainty and the skills to be able to say, okay, so if you want that, tell me why you want that and be really curious. Because what we tend to do is we make judgments really quickly. And of course, in uncertainty, those judgments are based on very little foundation.
Yeah.
So, and then what we tend to do is we make a judgment about what we think is true based on a set of assumptions that may not even be documented or well thought through. And then we look for evidence that proves our point, because we don't like to be wrong. So we look for that evidence, and then, and we do this on social media as well, and we discard anything else that disagrees with it. And if you look at, you know, most science, you could argue most things and you'll find scientists that could argue either way on virtually any topic. And so even with scientific research, it's rarely binary.
Yeah. The scientific research is based, and that whole thing is based on proving something doesn't work, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Proving
that something does work within a set of circumstances.
Yeah.
And so, and I think one of the things that we can easily overlook here is that as human beings, we're much more complex. We're not binary.
Yeah.
And actually project plans, we like to think, you know, here's 120 lines, or it's going to take 120 days and plus X for contingency or whatever it is. If we've got a plan and we can follow that perfectly, then that's the job done. We have to take into account the fact that we're human beings and that we have an emotional response to change, that we have an emotional response to uncertainty, that we have an emotional response to the new person joining the team, who we may or may not like for whatever reason, because we might not be a good values fit, or we might not just instantly click. So the human side of how we influence each other is nearly always overlooked in a project plan.
Yeah.
But it's fundamentally at the core of the ability of a project manager to succeed.
It's funny, something just pops in there. It's kind of... when you look at stakeholders, from what you said before on that, it's just made me think. Sometimes if you look at a project and you're as a project manager, you're there delivering your project, and you've gone around all your stakeholders and they're all in vigorous agreement on what the outcomes are meant to be, and they all have different areas that it come from, there's a very good chance that you've got it wrong. What do you mean? It's that if you've had that conversation to say there's six senior stakeholders and all of them absolutely are on board, it's kind of a red flag in some ways, because those human elements that you talk about there and their different perspectives would make something, it might only be mine, but something that they would say, but fine, that's the nice direction, but we need this bit as well, or this bit's more important to me. And if they're all saying the same thing, there's a good chance you've missed, or you're asking the wrong question.
Yeah.
And it's too high level. And then you get down into the detail and then all hell breaks loose because the conflicts start.
Or you've got a group of directors or stakeholders who are not diverse, and therefore they don't have a well-rounded view of the world. They may have a particular view of the world that doesn't represent the population or the customer base or the user base.
Because or they're all the same kind of behavior type or character type, and because we all like working with people like us because they all kind of, it's that scenario. I think it's funny, actually, it just makes me think about the yes woman scenario, where you have someone and they've got a load of people who completely would agree with them. And it's always presented as a, yeah, they're just people who are deferential to the person in charge. But it does also make you wonder whether it's just that, right, I have these kind of ideas, I'm this kind of person, and they bring in and attract people who are like them. So therefore, they will agree with them because they think in the same manner, they're willing to take the same kind of risks, they're willing to take or not take the risk, whatever. And you get that kind of, that again, it's about echo chamber kind of thing, isn't it? It's all about bringing the same thing in. You've without that diversity diversity with a big D and diversity with a little D, you don't get that. Sometimes you just don't get that right answer, do you?
No, and I think the thing here is that it's difficult to work through our differences of opinion.
Yeah.
It's so easy to agree, and it means that I can do things. I might think that I can do things faster if my team around me agree with everything I say. Because actually it's time consuming to stop and have a debate.
Yeah. If everyone did everything like me, life would be much better, wouldn't it?
Exactly. I think this is where we have to learn to slow down sometimes and to recognize that fast isn't always best. And actually fast is sometimes slower in the longer term, because you might think you've achieved something really quickly, but is it actually fit for what you're trying to do? And is it fit for and relevant for your audience? And does it move the organization forward? Or does it improve technology or whatever, you know, whatever kind of project you're running? And so, of course, we all want people around us who say, oh, yes, Jude, yes, Jude, yes, Jude, because that makes my life easier. But in reality, it doesn't longer term. And if somebody's going to call me out and say, hang on a minute, Jude, I don't think that's the right thing to do, I need to have the skills to be able to be curious instead of irritated.
Yeah. Because yeah. And that's a really good point. Yeah.
Because instantly I want to shut that opinion down.
Yeah.
Because I've got 1,001 things on my to-do list to do and haven't got time for a debate. And so you can see how levels of frustration and irritation can grow when people say no or when they bring a different point of view. But actually those debates, we need to start seeing them as useful and healthy and helpful so that we consider things from different perspectives. Because in the longer term, that actually speeds us up. What it also means is that if I know I've got someone on my team who's going to call me out and say, hang on, Jude, I think you're heading down the wrong route, I can actually go faster if I've got one of those people in my team.
Yeah.
Because I can start to trust that if I'm heading off in the wrong direction, somebody's going to call me out. And actually, I tend to build teams in that way with people who are going to call me out on stuff. Because that way I know that I can go headlong, and I am someone that works at 300 miles an hour, and I can go off really fast, knowing that someone's going to go, hang on, Jude, either too fast or wrong direction. And I then have to go, okay, stop. What are you seeing that I'm not seeing? And be really curious, even though I don't like it. Even though I might want to be irritated and frustrated, we need to manage our emotional state and really replace it with curiosity. I think curiosity is a really underrated skill in our leadership, no matter what your job role is.
I think it's, and I think the thing is it's a weird one, but as a society, and I've got 10-year-old and a 15-year-old, kids have had curiosity, maybe less so now, but it gets a little bit knocked out of you, doesn't it? It's kind of, stop asking why. And I was on another conversation the other day, and we were talking about the fact that why, such a powerful, powerful word when trying to understand what other people are doing or asking for or want. And it's using it over and over and over again to get there. And I think that whole thing where you say, I love that phrase that you use there, when someone, I've even written it down. When someone disagrees, with you that you should become curious, not irritated. I think that's a fantastic way that you put that across, because I do that myself. And I know there are, I can get frustrated with just make the decision, just do that. We'll do that. It's dead easy. Surely I can see it a mile away. And it, when it's not there and there's someone diving down into more detail, because I'm not, they're more detail orientated than me in this particular instance, I can sit there getting frustrated and annoyed instead of, as you say, sit back and go, why are they concerned? Should I be? Why are they asking that question? What is it from their point of view? It's unlikely to be that they're stupid. It's more likely to be that they have something, a different lens or something I've missed. And I've had people working with me in teams, I've mentioned them before, who I are kind of opposite to me in their style and the way that they think things, and were able to kind of tamp, like you're saying, just hold me back a little bit. They'd be my conscience when I was charging off in the wrong direction or with it with too quickly or whatever, as you say. And I think that finding people like that who you can build such a strong relationship with that they can grab you by the head and say, stop it, you're doing the wrong thing, without and you would feel uncomfortable, but you know that they're doing it with love in their heart to save you and them from getting somewhere. And I heard a story about the Wright brothers, that there was some situation and they were having a screaming argument at each other, and someone said, well, how can you do that, how can you work together like that? And I said, well, that's making sure we weren't having an argument. There was nothing at the end of it. It was how they discussed a problem that they had, because one of them had vehemently disagreed with what the other one was doing, and they were absolutely comfortable with telling them what they were doing wrong. And they would argue about it, and then they go, right, okay, here's the decision. But they were firm, and to others it might have seemed like an argument, but it was a firm conversation. And I've had people I've worked with where we've kind of stood up kind of toe-to-toe, and they were telling me I was wrong. And they told me I was wrong, and they had a go at me as wrong, and we had fruity language when we were doing it. And they spoke to me later and apologized, and I said, don't worry about it. I know the reason we do it, and actually you were right. You were trying to make the point with me, and you cared about it, and you were right. So that person, a brilliant person to have on my team.
Yeah. And I think the interesting thing here as well is that the dynamics of relationships are complex, because with some people, it's possible to have that really healthy debate where neither person takes it personally and it looks like a real ding dong.
Yeah.
But because nobody's taking it personally, what it actually creates is some energy, and it fuels passion and creativity, and some really good positive stuff can come out of it for those two people, if it works for those two people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if there are other people around you that are unnerved by that, then we also have to think about, well, what's the impact that we're having of that? So I have somebody that I work with on a regular basis in my business, and he and I have some real humdingers of debates and we can get really heated because we're both passionate about it, and we often take the opposite point of view. And at the end of it, we always come to some consensus. We always come to a decision that is rarely my decision or his. It's usually a combination of the two. And it's usually something that's vastly different from what we would have come up with individually.
Yeah.
And because we don't take it personally, we can have that really healthy debate. But we can't have it with a wider team around us, because actually it find that particularly some of the younger members of my team will find that more unnerving.
Yeah.
And so that's a debate that he and I would have when there's just the two of us. And we're always needing to think about, what's the impact that I'm having and what's the impact that I'm wanting to have, so that I'm engaging people and making them feel comfortable around me. Recognizing that uncertainty is already creating discomfort. So our job as leaders is to also create comfort as much as we possibly can to keep people with us. And, you know, going back to where we started around employee turnover, if we can't make people feel comfortable and safe, even in the midst of great uncertainty, they will leave.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not because they're not talented and it's not because we're not talented. It's just that the impact has just not been a good fit.
Yeah.
So continually need to look at, am I getting the impact that I want to have? And this is one of the things that, you know, I find working with the horses all of the time. The moment somebody walks through my gate, they have an impact on the horses. So as a team walk through the gate, the horses, if the team are exhausted and on their knees, which I've had quite a lot recently, the horses will all lie down. If the team are really stressed and there's huge amounts of energy and banter, the horses will gallop around. So the horses instantly are responding based on that team's impact. And usually that team have no idea that they have that impact. And so one of the things I think we need to really focus on is that self-awareness. And if you ask any leader, they'll tell you they're self-aware. In fact, usually the ones who tell me they're self-aware are the ones who are least self-aware. Because we all have a level of self-awareness, but we also all have our blind spots.
Yeah, and that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah. And so part of working with the horses is to uncover the blind spots, because they're very good at pushing those buttons and revealing that.
Yeah.
But part of our role as leaders is to continually be curious about, oh, there's a disagreement here, or there's a disconnect here. What does this person want from me? Because what we tend to do is say, this is what I want from that person. And I think we need to keep flipping that on its head and saying, what does this person want and need from me as a leader in order to feel safe to engage, in order to have that conversation that enables us to collaborate in a way that works for me and for them? So we're continually having to adapt our own behavior to fit with others, so that we can, and to do that in an authentic way. So it's not about me trying to be like you to fit in with you, or trying to be like somebody else who's quieter or louder. It's about saying, how do I match the energy and bring people with me, and continually look at the impact that I'm having and continually look to change it so that I get the impact that I'm wanting to have, which doesn't necessarily mean I get the result I want, or it doesn't mean it always goes my way.
Yeah.
But the impact being, we achieve the project, not necessarily my way, but we achieve it, or we achieve it where the relationships are intact at the end of it, hopefully.
Yeah, I always draw parallels in every single conversation that I've ever had, I think, on this show, around the DISC model. And I'm sure you've heard of the DISC model, the behavioral model. And that thing of where people are, that where you get people who are comfortable having those big arguments, and then you get people at the other end who are the team leaders who are the sort of like the high S's, who really, really would struggle with that kind of full-on banter of the high D's, that 5 minutes later they're best mates outside playing golf or whatever, or doing whatever, because that's what happens, is it's a big argument, it's dropped, and then they're best mates again. And I find that I have to think about it, and I don't do it enough, is about my behavior and how I influence other people. I still think of myself as the newbie, I'm still that 20-year-old who was doing stuff there. And I think that's part of the problem as well. Sometimes we don't see ourselves as those, such an influence. You still kind of that lack of confidence in there. And, and therefore that stops you realizing how much impact you can have in just your behavior on the whole team.
Yeah.
Because you don't, some people do, maybe it's just me, maybe others don't, but I don't see myself as, I was going to use the word role model, but that's not the word I'm thinking of, but it's kind of that kind of thing where people will will react to my behavior in different ways. Whereas I think I'm just a side character, if you like, in a novel rather than my novel sort of thing. And
I think, you know, if you go back to what project managers do, and what we tend to think that project managers do, is we think that they have a vision, they set the objectives, they build a plan, and then they execute the plan. Well, all of that's very transactional. And what actually project managers really do is build relationships and influence other people to do stuff that hopefully then executes the plan.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's easy to miss that that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
That what we're trying to do is lead and engage and inspire others to execute, because the project manager can't execute the whole plan.
Yeah.
But they can lead and inspire and encourage others to collaboratively create that vision and to be passionate about it and to be excited about it and want to get up in the morning and go, great, it's Monday.
Yeah. And I think it does, when you look at it now in the way that the word management is used in comparison to leadership, and you see lots of the memes where you'll have, this is a manager, this is a leader. And actually, that's where a lot of the misunderstanding of what a PM's job is. The PM's job isn't to follow a process. PM's job isn't to make sure the plan, you know, there's all those tools and techniques you've got that process, PM box, the APM prints, all that stuff. None of those things are any use for delivering projects. Mm. It, don't care what anyone says, I'll argue with them. The people deliver the projects. Yeah. And the squishy things deliver projects. Mm. They use those techniques and tools to do them, but it's the squishy things. And the squishy things get things done through relationships, and relationships are built through communication and interaction between us. And that's and if you're gonna lead, as you say, it's about project leadership and project leaders. I've seen it before. A project lead is seen as a subservient role to a project manager, because it's seen as a more sub-project manager, I've seen in some places. And it's kind of like, actually, we're project leaders. We don't manage a project. We lead a project, as you say. And it's about taking people with you, taking your sponsors with you, take your team with you, take your suppliers with you, take your consumers with you, and lead them to the conclusion of this project. You don't manage them. You don't corral them into it. You're actually just going, come on, let's go. And it's kind of goes there. I'm just noticing that we're coming up on an hour of recording now, and we haven't really talked about the horses much. it's how these things go anyway. But I kind of, do you want to, I'm intrigued and understand. I'm fascinated by the thought of just talk to us about, if someone was coming along and working with you and working with your horses, what would they expect? Or is it all secret and a big surprise?
It's not a secret at all. I mean, I share regularly on LinkedIn examples of people working with the horses. The horses respond based on your nonverbal behavior and communication. And usually when I say that, people sit up straight because they think it's their body language, but actually it's so much more. Yeah, it's so much more than that. It's what you're thinking, what you're feeling, your energy, your emotions, your intentions. It's almost as if they're mind readers. Of course they're not. But energetically, we change our energy different according to different scenarios and circumstances. And so the horses respond based on that. And what they're looking for is three things: clear direction. What are you asking me to do? Strong relationship based on trust and respect, and free will to choose whether they engage or not. And if you bring all three of those things, the horses will engage and come with you. And if you don't, they plant their feet and refuse to engage, which is pretty much what happens in the workplace as well. Because if you think about the best leaders that we want to be with, they're ones who are really clear what they want us to do. And we have trust and respect and a good relationship. And we feel like we have free will rather than being dragged or coerced or forced into doing something.
Yeah.
And so what the horses will do is engage and come with you willingly, or they plant their feet and refuse to engage. The other reason why they might refuse to engage is if your behavior is not congruent. So if you're thinking, this horse doesn't want to move, but then you go up to the horse and say, come with me, there's a mismatch between what you're thinking and feeling versus what you're asking. And they sense that. And if you think about that, as humans, we do too. So if you ever meet somebody and you shake their hand and you think, oh, there's something about this person that's just not quite,
yeah,
I can't put my finger on what it is, but we have that sense of, you know, is there something about that person that just doesn't gel? Probably their behavior is not congruent. They're probably hiding behind a mask and not being honest or transparent. And therefore we can't build a relationship with them. And so we'll tend to avoid those people, and we'll try and do it in a polite way. The horses aren't polite. They'll just plant their feet and refuse to engage. And so it's the most revealing feedback you'll ever have, both about where are you strong as a leader? So, you know, when you bring confidence and courage and clarity and relationship, they'll come really willingly. And that's really empowering to know that 800 kilograms of sentient being with a strong opinion is coming with you. And then if they're not engaged or they're not inspired by you, they just won't come. And if you try and use force, particularly with my mare Callie, she'll headbutt you. So she won't be forced, she won't be coerced, and many have tried, believe me. So when people take a shorter lead rope or they try and yank her, she'll headbutt them and say, not that. And of course, we can all think of somebody in the office that we'd like to quite like to headbutt or see headbutted by a horse. But and maybe
I've got a list.
Yeah, and maybe some of your listeners are the ones who, you know, will need the headbutt by the horse. And I, you know, goodness knows, I think I've been headbutted a few times by the horses. So, you know, we're all capable of bringing things that other people are saying, no, not that.
Yeah.
And the difference is people will go along with it for a period of time because we think we should, and the horses won't. So it is the clearest feedback you'll ever get, but it's the clearest feedback without an agenda other than, are you safe to follow as a leader? Are you someone that makes me feel like I want to come? Am I compelled to come with you? And so it has no agenda other than that. Whereas when we give people feedback in the office, if you think about the aggressive person in the team, everybody wants the aggressive person to be less aggressive.
Yeah.
Well, firstly, the aggressive person doesn't think they're aggressive. Secondly, they don't know any other way, and they think that you should behave in a different way, not them. And so we hit this impasse where nobody changes their behavior. Whereas when a horse is aggressive with me, my first thought is, what do they want from me that I'm not giving them? So when I took on a horse years ago who pinned me against the fence and snapped at me with his teeth, never bit me, but snapped at me, my first thought was, yikes, what does he need from me that I'm not giving? I'm not creating a scenario where he feels safe. Therefore, I need to do something different. And I completely changed my behavior. And as a result, he's a completely different horse. And so I think we need to do more of that in the workplace. And that's why I work with the horses, because individually, you get to see one-on-one, what are you like with the horse? When you start to then work as a team with a horse, you get to see all the default patterns of behavior that show up in a team. So, you know, who's the joker that gets distracted and wanders off? Well, as soon as that joker wanders off or gets distracted, that's what happens with the horse too.
Yeah.
Or where is the communication not effective enough? So the person who's leading from the front is not being given feedback from behind, from the wider team, and therefore they keep turning around and getting involved in the detail because nobody's telling them to back off, or nobody's giving them feedback and saying, don't worry, here's a problem that we're dealing with, but we've got it. We don't need you to get involved. So a lot around, how do you empower people? How do you get people to step out of the detail? Pretty much all of the things that we grapple and struggle with in our leadership of each other in the workplace, all of those things show up around the horses. And so we reveal them so they become much more conscious, and we start to look at, so how does the aggressive person who gets headbutted by a horse, what helps have they got that is not aggression? And usually what you find is that if we flex our style, the horses will then engage. And so people quickly learn how to change their behavior. Because I think that's something we don't know how to change behavior quickly. And so we don't change it. We stay with the same old patterns of behavior.
Yeah.
Working with the horses, people learn, if I recalibrate or just shift my behavior or my attention slightly, it can have a dramatic impact. And to then realize that whenever, so now, for example, whenever something's not working or a relationship is just not quite in flow, my first response is, what do they need from me? And to change my behavior, because if I want to change somebody else's behavior, I have to change my own.
Yeah, that's the powerful thing, isn't it? That, as you said about forcing someone to do something, forcing them to be different. And I think a lot of us sit back and go, well, I'm me. I can't just change who I am. I wouldn't be me. And whilst that is true, it's not about changing who you are. It's about recognizing where the way that you are naturally rubs up against someone else. Yeah. And I always talk about the disc ice cream view of talk of if you're with your child and they step out into the road, you immediately turn into someone who's very forced, very authoritative and very shouting. You shout at that person to get back on there and you grab them and you launch them onto the road. They start crying. At that point, you drop down to your knees, you give them a hug, you soothe them, you be that nurturing kind of much more nurturing character. Then you say, right, okay, should we go and have some fun? Let's go and have an ice cream. You become more fun, that more uplifting person who kind of, let's go and do something. And then quietly, when you're sat there, you slowly explain to them the reason why you shouted and what might have happened had they done it and why they need to concentrate. But actually, all of those three behaviors are very, very different styles of leadership.
Yeah.
That you, in a matter of seconds and minutes, have gone one to the other to the third. You know, you go bang, 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 without even thinking about it. You just do it. So as a person, we can change our behavior at a drop of a hat, depending Absolutely. On the situation. But when we're working and we're in an environment that's maybe a less intense environment, we have to slow ourselves down, as you said earlier, so that we can speed up. If you slow yourself down and think, hang on, the question you said there, why are they like that? Why is this happening? So that you can then modify, because otherwise we just charge on, don't we? I think it's really, really, really key to think about, what does this person need from me at this point in time?
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, Duke, thank you very much for some fantastic conversation there, some fascinating stuff with the horses there. I'm going to continue that conversation with you outside of here, and the whole thing is it's just got lots of things pinging around in my head. If people want to get in touch with you, if they want to come along and experience the learning how to improve their leadership with the horses, or grab hold of one of your books, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Probably my website, judejennison.com. So you can find links to my books on there. You can find out about me. You can find out about my work with the horses, or on LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Jude Jennison. It's the best thing about my name is it's unusual enough that you can find me easily on LinkedIn and pretty much on any social media platform.
Yeah, I have the same sort of thing. It's quite useful, isn't it? Well, it's brilliant. So what I'll do, I'll put links in the show notes to both of those anyway, so people can get hold of you. So all it leaves me to say is thank you very much for giving me so much time and imparting so much knowledge and information there. It's been a brilliant conversation, and have a fantastic rest of your evening.
Thank you very much, Nigel. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Well, I hope you enjoyed that chat at the second part with Jude, and show notes, got all the details of contacting her to find out more. Next week, we've got Match Legal on the show, and we're talking about Teamwork 9.0, which is, and Enneagrams, which are a tool used based on neuroscience for looking at how you put together teams and how they dynamically fit together. So fascinating and relevant to you guys. Look after yourself and speak next week. Bye. Wow, you made it this far. I'm guessing that you enjoyed the show if you have, or maybe you've just left it playing in the background and forgot it was on. But if you did enjoy it and you're inclined to, I'd be delighted if you could share the show with your colleagues. It's discoverability with podcasts is quite difficult, especially with a niche one like this. But sharing with your colleagues and letting them have a chance to listen to these fantastic guests would be brilliant. If you've got time, a review on whatever platform you listen to it on would be great too, especially if it was a 5-star one. Again, that makes it easier for people to discover the show when they're searching on there, because comments raise it up the old search engine, up some optimization on all the different tools. If you are feeling flush, I have a couple of ways you could contribute. One is Patreon, patreon.com/SundayLunchPM, and you can donate some money to the podcast that way, or you can jump along to my website, nigelcreaser.com, www.nigelcreaser.com, and click on the link to the shop. And in there, you've got all my books that I've created in the varying different guises, a number of different ways you can grab a copy of those. And down the bottom, I've got my guests' books. So everyone who's been on here, if they've had a book, I've got a link to their book in there, and Amazon give me a little bit back for when someone buys from them. But more importantly, if you come back next time and listen, I'll be delighted. So I'll leave you alone and let you get on with your day now. Thank you. Bye. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.